Well, hey guys, welcome to the Bowhunting Soul Podcast. Thanks for joining me again. I'm going hog hunting. That's right. Pretty jazzed about it. So a few days ago, my buddy Jim Desias decides that he took give me a phone call. Well, actually, he didn't give me a call. He texted me. And he's like, hey, last minute notice, I know, but do you want to go hog hunting down in Georgia? And I'm like, duh, yeah, but tell me all about it. So apparently, Jerry Russell had put up some hunts on the Facebook, some Facebook group. I didn't even see it, but then Jim decided, okay, well, he's going to buy up like the first block of time for hunters. I guess there's going to be multiple blocks throughout the summer, and we are going to be the first ones on this property in about 7 months. So it'll be about as pure and uneducated hogs, basically, to hunting pressure or whatever as you can possibly get. So anyway, he's like, hey, do you want to go? I already blocked off this time. And I said, sure, absolutely. I absolutely want to go. I got to check with the family. And I got the okay from them, even though it's last minute. And so I'm going to basically drive. I'm going to drive down there. I thought about flying, but by the time you pay, it'll be about the same with you know, less hassle with flying and all that. Don't want to deal with the planes. You're gonna have to check all the baggage. If you shoot something, then you know you're bringing a cooler home, shipping it home. It's just easier. I mean, I'm used to driving. You know, it's 19 hours. It's a hop, skip, and a jump, but it's no big deal. I'm used to making that trip almost, you know, damn near in my sleep. Except this time I'll be in my car, and I won't be in a, you know, Chevy dually with a 28-foot trailer behind me. So going down there, again, leaving super early Sunday morning, drive all day, get down there, and then we're going to hunt Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And super psyched about it. And, of course, then the panic hits, like, oh, my God, what am I going to take? What am I going to shoot? What combination am I going to do? So, you know, last few days here, I've been, you know, going to the local range after work, and just soaked in mosquito repellent, basically, and just shooting various combinations I have. What am I going to feel more comfortable with? Doing a lot of stump shooting with broadheads and stuff. Just trying to figure out, you know, what's going to be the most forgiving. What's going to be my best setup, my most accurate setup, that kind of thing. So, last 3-4 nights, basically, I've gone out with the ASL, I've gone out with my elk cart, and today I just actually went out with my grizzly. And it's going to come down to the ASL number one and then the elk cart number two. It's just those are the best setups I have. I have in this episode, by the way, I have Paul McGarg, and we get into ASLs and we get into setups and how to shoot them and what he shoots and, you know, some of my woes and you know, issues I'm having with certain arrow setups and this, that, and the other. Well, as of today or as of yesterday, it's been decided. I have a killer setup for it. I have a really forgiving, okay, setup for it. And it's probably going to be, I haven't decided whether it's going to be the Swamp Sharks or the Ace Standards, but either one of them fly absolutely beautiful. I'm super confident in it. And my backup one or my secondary one is going to be my elk cart, which again is a little finickier to shoot, a little less forgiving sometimes if I mess up. But I mean, it's still a dream. So it's going to be those two bows. I'm going to drive down and hopefully shoot something. So I'm not sure about the third hunter. There's three of us here. Jim knows him. I don't. I'm sure we're gonna get along just fine and become new friends. I don't know if this is considered a PBS hunt. But all three of us are PBS members, so maybe it is a PBS hunt. I'm not sure, but either way, pretty stoked about it and pretty jazzed. It's like a kid kind of counting down toward Christmas. So now I'm like refletching things. I'm, you know, resharpening things, make sure everything's ready to go. And you know, I haven't even started packing my pack or anything like that yet. But that's gonna be pretty quick. So anyway, that's the latest that's been going on in my world. So hopefully something good will come of it. Meaning, like, you know, lots of pig meat. So okay, so today's episode, like I alluded to, is Paul McGarg. He is a bow hunter down from southern Illinois. Never heard of him until I watched the push video about the ASL video, right? The long video they put out, you know, a bunch of months back. I've probably watched the video, no joke, minimum 30-35 times. Kind of become a fanboy of watching that. It never leaves my queue. I don't know what it is, but I needed to talk to somebody who's been shooting these things a long, long time, and, you know, just kind of pick their brain about, you know, what it is about these bows, this style of bow that makes it so great for them, what they prefer, as far as like setups, how they do setups. And I know Paul's a big ground hunter, which really, really intrigues me a lot. And I really wanted to pick his brain about ground hunting and what he uses, and just all kinds of things, right? So I'm really, really glad we got a chance to talk. And he said he's going to be at ETAR too, so hopefully I'll meet him going out to ETAR again. If all the, you know, stars align and everything else like that. But my plan is to be at ETAR, which is at the end of July. So hopefully I'll get to meet him and all these other people, these awesome people that we kind of interact with on social media and whatnot. So that'll be good. So with that said, really, there's everything else we kind of talk about in the episode. So not much. I'm trying to think if there's anything else I need to do. Yeah, anyway. No, I don't. Other than the normal little mini commercials, you know, follow the push, right? The Push Center, Archery Center of Knowledge, great courses on there. A lot of the stuff has helped me tremendously on there. Make sure you follow those. Hiko Ito Knives, I'm going to take one of his knives down, and hopefully I'm going to actually get to use it. It is the EDC Skinner Light EDC Skinner Light knife, right, that he makes. And I haven't had a chance to use it for anything, like for any, you know, in anger, basically, as they say. So hopefully it'll get bloody. I'll get a chance to use it. So go check out Hiko's stuff. HikoItoKnives.com, I think, is his website. But yeah, that's it, really. Nothing much else. Hope your guys' summer and summer activities are going good. I'm going to go down. I'm hopefully not going to get bit by spiders and snakes and anything else, because that's my biggest nightmare down there is creepy crawlies. But I can't pass up hog hunting for fear of getting eaten alive. So that's what it's going to be. All right. So without any further ado, here is my interview with Paul McGarg. You can hear me fine, okay. Right?
Yep.
Okay. Sometimes it's slow to react there. It says recording. There we go. All right, okay. Cool. Okay, so on the phone, I have Paul McGarg. Did I say that last name correctly? McGarg?
McCarg.
McCarg. Okay, so you do say the hard G there. Okay, McCarg. So yep. First of all, thank you for being on. We've been trying to schedule this for, you know, a little while now and stuff, and, you know, some issues back and forth time wise on both ends, and then I'm glad we can connect. So I appreciate you being here.
Sure, no problem.
So, man, you and I really haven't talked. We talked about like 30 seconds before we started recording here. And you said, what do you want to talk about? And I said, well, a little bit of everything. So I really wanted to dive in to the ASL world, right? And I know you from a little bit that I know of you is from the ASL world, from the push video, which I've probably seen, I'm not kidding, no less than 30, 35 times. I mean, it's on my playlist all the time. Yeah, it's a sickness. You know what I mean? But before we get into that one, maybe we can just kind of give a kind of brief overview of who you are, kind of what you do in your regular life, that kind of thing, and then we can kind of go from there.
Sure. Sure. So, you know, I guess for my regular life, I'm a woodworker for a living. I build custom furniture and restore antiques, work for myself, and I've had my business for 26 years. You know, and as far as the hunting stuff, I'm 50 now, and I've been hunting, bow hunting since I was 15, I think. Been hunting with an ASL for maybe 20 years, I think. You know, it all kind of runs together after a while, but that's pretty much it. I gun hunted, you know, when I was younger, but I haven't gun hunted in years. You know, here in Illinois, it's just shotgun only. So, I don't know. It was fun when I was young. It just is not much of a thrill now.
Did you come from a hunting family?
My grandpa, gun hunted a little bit. But as far as bow hunting, no, I'm the only one that bow hunts in the family.
So what sparked that passion to kind of go in that bow hunting direction?
Well, you know, I always grew up in the woods. You know, I'd get in trouble in school or whatever, but my mom would always let me go into the woods. I guess in her mind, she thought I couldn't get in any trouble. So I spent most of my youth in the woods. When I was in, you know, probably sixth, seventh grade, I had a trap line and I ran it every day before school, all the way through high school. And then just kind of went right into bow hunting just because, you know, I could be in the woods more. So in the beginning, that was my excuse. It was a reason to be out in nature a little bit more.
Who or what was your, teacher or, where did you get any kind of instruction, or did you just kind of just pick up a bow? I mean, did you watch old, I don't know, Fred Bear movies? I mean, what was your, who taught you?
Really nobody, just kind of, you know, trial and error. And that's why, you know, when I first started, there was no internet and, you know, couldn't watch Howard Hill or Fred Bear or any of the great guys. So you just kind of would go to, you know, an archery club and talk to some of the old timers and, you know, and try and glean a little bit of knowledge from them. My brother went into the Air Force and he left behind a bear recurve. And that's what I started shooting. So I just kind of, you know, trial and error. That's why my form is maybe a little bit different than everybody else's. And, you know, I've got a really high anchor and kind of look a little bit awkward maybe shooting sometimes, but that's just because that's what worked and that's how I taught myself. Just never really saw a huge reason to change it. But that's
that. Did you find success relatively quickly, or how long did it take you?
I think I bow hunted 4 years, maybe five, before I even got a shot at a deer.
But okay, that makes me feel good because I'm on year five right now.
Well, back then in Illinois, there was not that many deer.
Yeah.
And then, you know, now we're known as a, you know, a great deer state, which we are, but 30 years ago, not so much.
Yeah.
So it took a while, you know, and tree stands were relatively new back then. I mean, there were some, but we hunted with a lot of homemade tree stands and, you know, it was just all trial and error. You know, I didn't have anybody to take me out and hold my hand and help me with it. I just had to work my way through it.
Interesting. So I guess I'm going to ask this, since there wasn't as many deer back then, right? So you didn't get as much opportunities to be around it and I guess pick up on their behavior. And then how was it learned? I know you said it took a few years, several years, right? But I mean, the encounters that you had, I mean, you must have picked up pretty quickly because you didn't have that many encounters. Does that make sense? I mean, you kind of, it sounds like you were like a quick study on it, because if there's not that many deer to go around, you're like, okay, well, the few encounters I do have, I got to learn. What were some of like the key things that you learned early on that just like was a light bulb, like, ah, okay, they do this, so I need to do this?
Well, mainly here, it was centered around crop fields. You know, and I learned quite a bit about animal behavior just from, you know, having a trap line and stuff like that for so long. So I knew I had to get close to the crops, and that's how I centered, you know, every place I have, you know, around that.
So were you actually setting up like on field edges or something like that, or did you
I would sit right on the edge of a field, and I don't ever do that now. So
okay, and that's something I want to dive into in a little bit here. I want to get into your hunting strategy, hunting tactics, that kind of stuff, but that's going to be a little ways down. So I think I don't know if we were recording when I was saying this, but I mean, I must have watched that the push video like no less than 30, 35 times.
Yeah.
It's still in my queue, right? I'll watch it probably every other night just to see the bows being drawn back. And I don't know, what it is about it. Now, I have a St. Patrick Lake, right? Just like you do. I don't know if how many ASLs or whatever, you know, your kind of progression was, but you know, it was the first one that kind of like gelled with me, right? It was my second ASL ever, but kind of took the plunge. Everyone said these bows are really sweet. And you know, I have a Pacific Stick sitting up here, right? So of course I'm kind of like, I've dove in head first and I'm trying to gobble up anything I can as far as, you know, how to shoot these things, how other people shoot these things, setups, arrow setups, that kind of stuff. So those are kind of things I want to dive into. So when did you first get into the ASLs? What was it? And was it how was your transition from shooting like a bear recurve?
So I had, and again, back then there was no internet. So everything was stuff that I read about or found in traditional bow hunter. So I had saw an ad for, you know, Howard Hill longbows, and I knew who Howard Hill was, but I didn't have any of his books or anything like that. So I'd sent off for one of their catalogs and I got it. And I think I just wore it out flipping through the pages. I was probably, you know, maybe 19 at the time, maybe 20, just the simple elegance, I guess, of the bow. And, you know, some of the cool pictures that they have in there, it just really drew me to it. And so I'd say for a long time and finally ordered one and it just clicked. It, you know, I thought, man, this is what I've been missing this whole time.
So your first bow, Howard Hill, right?
Yep. It was a Howard Hill Red Man.
Okay. Transition to it. How did it go?
It was a little different because I went from an aluminum riser recurve, you know, so just, you know, the same struggles that everybody else has, the light mass weight of them. And, you know, in my opinion, and everything I tell you is just my opinion. Somebody else might do it totally different, and that's great. But the ASLs are just meant to be natural, you know, to shoot them naturally. The harder you work to shoot them good, the worse your shot's going to be. You just have to be as natural and as smooth. I don't think they like to be held very long. So I shoot, I don't snap shoot, but I shoot pretty quick. And it seems like the longer I hold and try and aim, the worse my shot is. So big change.
Why do you think that is?
Well, I honestly think that's just how Howard Hill came out. That's how he shot. So he designed a bow to match his style of shooting. He came from, and I don't claim to be a Howard Hill expert at all, but he came from shooting self bows, and that's how you shoot a self bow, just kind of fast. And that style, you know, carries over to the ASLs.
Let's get into how you particularly shoot this thing, because you compete with these things too, right? With these ones. And you did. I'm going to screw it up here, so I want you to say it, but because I'm not really into the competition side of things, and if I were to try and name a sanctioning body or whatever, I would completely screw it up. But you were very successful with a Hill bow, and I believe you got third, I think, second or third, right? And so
yeah,
go to that real quick into your competition side, just to give a kind of provenance to you know, just how good you are with one of these things.
So last year at Trad Worlds, which is an IBO sanctioned event, I got third in longbow class with a St. Patrick Lakes, which is now the Mushin. But at the time, it was just a prototype and didn't have a name. And basically, it's just Eric's design of a back set ASL, which is my favorite kind. That's what I always shot, and I just like them a little bit better. But I've shot, you know, really last year was the first year I decided just to compete with an ASL, because you really are at a disadvantage. They're not, in my opinion, not made to be just a strictly a target bow. They're designed to hunt with. So you are at a disadvantage. The guys with the great big heavy risered longbows, that are shooting really light poundage, and I mean they're all tough to shoot. But I competed for years with a heavier, you know, mass weight longbow. Shot Big Jam a lot, which are great longbows. That's what I took to France for World Archery. And then I just decided, you know, as soon as tournament season is over, which is about in August, end of July for us, I put my target bows up and just shot ASLs the rest of the year. And I thought, found one of Eric's bows and really liked it. And I thought, I'm just going to shoot one all the time, compete with it and everything. And it's worked out pretty good so far.
The things you look for in a competition bow, are they the same things you're looking for in a hunting bow, like you personally?
No. For a competition bow, I like a, you know, as long as I can get, which is usually 70 inches, really smooth, and a heavier mass weight riser, and speed is the main thing I look for competition. For an ASL for hunting, I want quiet and smooth. That's my main thing. Speed, you know, no longbow is going to be speed demons. But these ASLs that are being made now, they can keep up with any reflex deflex bow out there, just about. I'm not saying they're all as fast, but
sure.
I think mine, the Mushin that I shot last year with a shooting about 11 grains per pound, it was like 172 feet per second.
Oh, no kidding.
There's nothing to sneeze at. So, and the ones he's making now are even better and faster if you care about that. But no, for hunting, I think what really draws me to them is that they're just so natural and easy to point. And they're so quiet. That's the main comment I get from people that I shoot with. They might not even know what an ASL is, but every one of them will comment about how quiet that bow is.
Mm-hmm.
So,
how about your the ASL that you shoot in competition versus the one that you would take to the woods? I mean, is it the same?
Same bow,
same poundage, everything too.
Yep.
Interesting.
I had it for, you know, I've been through like everybody, been through every bow made just about, and several I liked and a few I didn't care for, but that's just me. I hunted for years with a Northern Miss Shelton and killed a lot of deer with that, and it was almost 70 pounds draw weight. And then, you know, getting older and having some shoulder stuff and that, I thought I'm going to try and go down and weight a little bit. And the last 2 years I've been right around 50 pounds and not had any trouble at all with penetration and that on deer.
Mm-hmm. And the Shelton is that his back set model? Steve's back set model or no? It is. Okay.
No, I'm sorry. That's a string follow.
Okay. Yeah. That's what I thought.
Yeah. And I think I probably killed, I don't know, 85 deer with it.
Oh, wow.
And I loved it. I mean, I almost didn't even have to think about my shot. I knew the bow so well.
Mm-hmm. So you're down in the 50-pound range, you said, basically now, right? I mean, and you're drawing what? What's your draw? I mean, not that it really matters, but
9.5.
29. Okay. So you got a pretty good power stroke there going.
Yeah.
And you said you kind of aim for about what, 11 greens per pound kind of thing?
It just depends on what arrow I get to tune.
You know,
the distances we shoot, me and Cody Greenwood were just talking about, you know, you can shoot, you know, 12, 14 grains per pound, and it's not going to affect your, you know, your accuracy or your aiming too much, because we're not shooting out to 30 yards. Most of our shots are 15 and under.
Yeah.
So, you know, I do believe that, you know, the heavier arrow you can get to tune and shoot well, the better you are.
I think I'm sitting at about 500. Well, okay. Depending on the arrow, and I want to get into this a little bit, because I've had some woes, and you and I kind of messaged back and forth a little bit. I was asking about, you know, what arrow setup and things like that. So I want to get into some of the quirks of shooting an ASL and tuning an ASL. Mm-hmm. Not just yet though, but I'm kind of around like 530 to 560 ish, let's say, right? 570 ish, depending on which arrow. The one that's kind of working out best for me is like 530 ish, something like that. And I'm shooting like 44 pounds, right? At 27 inch. So, I can't do the math right now in my head, but you know, it's not crazy high, but I mean, I've shot a 610 grain arrow out of that. Super quiet. Love it. It's just that, you know, one tunes, one's a little bit more forgiving than another. But as far as the way you shoot it now, right? Are you shooting the same way? I might have asked you that in a different form of this question, but I just want to clarify. When, let's just say you take this bow into competition, uh-huh. Are you shooting the same way as you are? And are they even the same distances? I don't even know what distances are involved in competition shooting, right? But are you shooting this the same way that you do when you're out in the woods?
So for world archery, it's 33 yards is our max, and IBO is 25.
Okay.
Neither of those. I would, if everything was right, I might take a 25 yard shot at a deer. But most of my shots are way less than that. Mm-hmm. So as far as aiming style, it's the same. But during competition, I do pay a little bit more attention to yardage. But when I'm hunting, I just use the, I guess, close, medium, and far thing. You know, at close, I shoot at on a deer. The way my setup is, my arrow points right at the belly line. Medium shot, which is about 15 to 20. I put it right where it needs to be, point on. And on my far shots, which is, you know, 25 yards, I put it on the back. So I don't have to, if a deer comes in, I don't have to worry about yardage too much. I just, it's kind of, I'm not going to say I shoot instinctive, but the shot process is pretty instinctive.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, is that kind of like a go, no go kind of gauge that kind of goes off in your head and you're just good with it? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gotcha. And then, and I think I remember you said that you use a tab for one and glove for another.
Yeah.
Walk me through that. Why is that?
Well, so last year I just, a tab for competition is more accurate. I'm not saying there's guys out there that can't shoot a glove as accurately, but on the whole, a tab is more accurate. Whether a guy can shoot the difference, I don't know, but you know, that's why they use tabs in the Olympics, and all of the top bare bow shooters in the world use a tab. And so at the time of Trad Worlds, I was getting a really good shot, you know, off the string good, and that with a tab. But, and then I just go to hunting with a glove because it's just more natural to me. And worst case scenario, I forget my glove, I can shoot bare fingered and it's the same. But this year I've not even shot a tab. I've just been shooting a glove all year long. Cause I'm just getting more and more, the older I get, the more focused I'm getting on just purely hunting.
Okay. You think with the glove, is it just cause like they're thicker, just doesn't come off as cleanly, or what's the,
well, I think because they are thicker, and a glove, if it doesn't fit you right, will bunch up, you know, and you won't come off the string as clean. And a tab, especially a 3 under tab, it's just one piece of leather, so you just come off the string a lot cleaner. To me, there's no doubt that a tab is better.
Okay.
But at 15 yards at a whitetail, the accuracy part of it, I don't think is that critical. You know, tab or glove. Again, that's just my opinion.
Yeah, yeah. I just always, I'm always curious with, well, you know, we can get into the tuning part of this now because I do want to dive into this stuff. So, how do you go about? Let's just say you get a new bow, you get new arrows, whatever. You probably got this thing dialed in at this point. You know what to do, where to cut, what to make, right? But yeah. Let's just say you're either teaching someone how to start, or you're starting with a new bow. What's your process for tuning this thing? Like, what's step one? How do you do it? You know, what do you tune for, and how do you make those adjustments to tune? I know, well, it's a lot, but yeah.
So I'm not super in depth with it. Like, you know, there's a video on the push that Cody and Matt did, which is a tuning video that I think every traditional archer should watch. They really get deep into every minutia of the tuning process from A to Z. But as far as me, for an ASL and wood arrows, what works for me is about 5 pounds over my draw. So if I'm shooting a 50-pound bow at my draw length, I go 5 pounds over. So I'm shooting 55 spine arrows with 125 or 135 grain points. If I'm going to shoot 165 grain points, then I might go up to 60 spine arrows, go 10 pounds over. But as a rule, I just go 5 over and I'm good, whether that's tournament or hunting or whatever. And aluminums, I know about where I'm at. I shoot either 2216 or 2219s, and I bear shaft those and start cutting them down until I get a good tune. Carbons, I don't get along with very well. They're great arrows. I really struggle. My wife shoots carbons. She's a great tournament archer and hunter also. And when it comes time to set hers up with carbons, I dread it because we always fight it.
Really?
Wood arrows and aluminum just seem to come really easy and natural. So that's what I stick with.
I wonder why that is. Because to my mind, right, or to anybody that's kind of coming into this world from, let's say, something that has more of a shelf cut, more room in the riser, more sight picture, more whatever, a little closer to center shot, that kind of thing. So the ASL is already like nowhere near, and we're not talking, you know, in any bows that are like Eric's offering, like kind of cut the center, right?
Yeah.
We're talking just like your standard, quote, air quotes, your old school ASL, right?
Sure.
Nowhere near cut the center. So you already got a narrow, but you've already got the arrow pointing outwards, right? I mean, every bow points outwards, but an ASL, especially in self bows or any kind of long bows like that with a narrow kind of V, you know, between the shelf and the side plate or whatever, you're already pointing the arrow even farther outboard. So then when you use a wood arrow, right, which is a fat shaft, you're kicking that even more farther outboard, right? So it's almost like someone coming into this that is like geeked out about tuning, it would almost be like counterintuitive. Like, why would this tune better when you've got an even fatter shaft on a smaller, narrower shelf, you know? Like, but I don't know. It seems to work. And I don't know whether it's because of the cant, right? Because, you know, with ASLs, we typically tend to cant the bows a whole lot more. So that it opens up, you know, that takes away some of that, you know, harsh, you know, vector, you know, going outboard, right? I mean, what's your thoughts on that?
Well, I think woods just naturally shoot better out of them. You know, maybe it's nostalgia, maybe it's all in my head. But I can't hardly tell it accuracy-wise between woods, aluminums, and carbons. And maybe I'm not a good enough shot to tell. I don't know, but I hunt way more with wood and aluminum. I don't really even hunt with carbon ever.
Yeah.
Because I've always had good luck and good success with the other two. I have tried the new their Vector carbon arrows, and I have got those to tune really well. And shoot.
When I said Vector, I meant like the actual like physical, like the geometry term, you know, that it makes like out, you know, a line going outboard and left rather, you know. But yeah.
But there is a carbon arrow with that name.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and I think they're made up in your neck of the woods.
Oh, really?
But they're really small, I guess, micro diameter, and they shoot really well. But other than those, I seem to struggle with them out of an ASL. And I know a lot of guys have really good luck with them, so with carbons in general.
Yeah, so I'm shooting just gold tip traditional 600s out of mine. And I was thinking about dabbling into the woodies. And I did get a set of wood arrows, but they just ended up being like way too stiff for my ASL. They're actually shooting pretty good out of my JavaMat L cart. And actually just yesterday I went out with, was it yesterday or this morning? Maybe this morning. I was gifted this old Browning Explorer 1 recurve, right? And with that one, I was shooting... because the side plate on that one is cut so far, I was actually impacting to the right with carbon. So I'm like, well, let's just try a fatter shaft. And sure enough, they're just going right down the center. They shoot about 5, 4 or 5, you know, inches high, 6 inches high than I want. So I have to actively aim down, but man, do they fly sweet. They're quiet. So I'm kind of wanting to dabble again in the woodies with the ASL, but I'm I personally tend to, in all my bows, end up with a weaker spine than most would probably suggest, right? That's just whether the way I torque it or the way I pluck or whatever it happens to be. So, and of course they're pricey, right? So I don't want to go down that road and like make the mistake of like, I got a dozen or half dozen or whatever, and I'm out like, you know, 100, 150 bucks or whatever it is. But I would like to explore the woody thing with ASLs just because I think they look cool with them. And obviously like many, many people, hundreds, thousands, whatever people like get these things have gotten these things to shoot and they go together like peanut butter and jelly. I just want to get that right peanut butter and jelly recipe.
Well, and you know, you said about you being lighter in spine. A lot of guys may hear this and think, gosh, he's only shooting 5 pounds over his draw weight with a 29.5 inch draw. He's way under spine. And I guess in theory I am, but that's what's always worked for me. I can't really explain it, but it works and I'm not going to change it. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So the woe, I'm going to put you in the seat of, playing a bow doctor here. Okay. Tuning doctor. So, the issues that I've had with mine, and when I say issues, it's issues of me shooting it in my hands. I find that this bow, if I do I have to do everything perfect as far as alignment, as far as I can't short stroke it. I have to come to full draw. I have to have a good rearward release, or at least not a collapsing release kind of thing. If I short stroke this thing at all, it goes left. Okay. I impact 2 to 3 inches left at, let's say, you know, 13, 15 yards. With my style, and if I don't come, I'm trying to use like a feather to nose method, and mm-hmm. not so much for like a psycho trigger, but more, I know when I get there, I have drawn it back enough and my elbow, my string arm or whatever is in better alignment. And I'm not, when I release, I'm less likely to pluck it. But if I don't do that, or if I'm in a twisted kind of contorted position or whatever, I will impact left. If I were to put up a brand new target face and shoot 100 arrows out of it, the shotgun pattern, right, of all the holes will be decidedly like 2 to 3 inches to the left. I have to actively either aim to the right a little bit or make sure that I'm not doing anything stupid. Now, this is more of a problem with this bow than any other bow that I have. Okay.
probably, and I'm guessing is because of that shelf, right? Now the bear shaft flies beautiful, right? The groupings are beautiful. It's just if I don't do it all right, they all kind of group and go to the left, and they fly right. They fly beautiful. It's just the impact point is not there. And I've been struggling with that. This bow is a very, very kind of good teacher to be like, hey, it shows when you screw up. That's for sure.
They are a great teacher for sure. And I would agree with you. If you do anything wrong, it's going to tell you about it. But when you do it right, it's such a good reward from the bow.
Oh, the sense of accomplishment or joy or whatever you want, you know, when this thing, when you do it right and the arrow's flying beautiful and it impacts beautiful, there's really, I don't know, you get more of a sense of kind of, you know, it warms your heart a little bit more just to see that than with other bows. I don't know what it is. Well, you know what it is. It's just hard to describe, you know, but, yeah. You know, I also find that, so I have several different arrow setups that fly and tune well out of this bow, but they go from more forgiving to less forgiving. Mm-hmm. Like I have like full length 32 inch 500 spine with I think it's like 50, they're like 300 grains up front total, right? They will not do the left impacts as much as some of the other tunes, but I hate full length arrows. Even with a 66 inch bow, you know, you set the thing down, you lean it against the tree, and then you pick it up, and then all the arrow knocks are like, you know, packed full of dirt, right? Or mud, yeah, and stuff. That annoys me. Also, you know, with that long of an arrow, when you draw, I get that bounce, you know, like boing, 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 you know, as you're drawing back. That annoys me. I don't want to make that noise. I don't make that sound. So then going to another setup, I have a 600 spine, and God, this one is like really short. It's like 28 and three quarter or something like that, or 28, 7/8. And that one has like 350 grains up front total. Now I'm not chasing FOC. I'm just trying to chase what tunes, right? That one, again, that arrow weighs 610 grains. If I do everything absolutely perfect, it flies beautiful, impacts beautiful, but that's the least forgiving one I have. And then there's another 600 that's like an inch longer than that, that has, I think, a total of like 250 up front maybe. And that seems to be the one that gives me, you know, it's like a 30 inch arrow, just under 30 inch, 29 and three quarter, something like that. And that seems to be the one that gives me the most best of both worlds, right? It's not too long, but it's also forgiving enough, but it's not as forgiving as that long, the 32 inch long arrow. So I'm kind of in that conundrum, you know, And the reason I messaged you, I think last week or whatever we were talking about, what arrows, is I'm trying to pick people's brains about, like, you know, like, do these things happen with wood arrows too? Am I just going to be in the same boat with just a different, you know, shaft material? Or is it there's something magical about it that doesn't do that? You know what I mean?
Well, I don't know if there's anything magical about them. But I will say for me, they're easier to find one that shoots better out of an AS.
Yeah.
Again, I think it may all go back to Howard Hill's original design, and then the improvement that the guys have made making them in years since. I agree with you with the full length arrows. I shoot a really short arrow for 3D in competition. My field point is actually on my shelf, and for hunting, I draw it back to where the back of the broadhead touches my left pointer finger. So I shoot a pretty short arrow, or as short as I can get by with. I think in your case, you know, with the left impact, and again, I'm no tuning expert by any means. But I think a lot of guys have this with the left impacts. If you're right-handed, coming from a bow that's more cut to center, I think subconsciously you use your riser, the sight window, as an aiming point a little bit, or a reference. And when you go to an ASL that or a self bow that's not cut to center at all, you're still kind of subconsciously using that sight window as a reference, and it pushes you over to the left. So for a long time, I had to make a conscious effort to make sure and kind of push with my left hand, you know, when I'm at full draw, and make sure my arrow is perfectly in line, right, with the target.
Yeah, and I can tell you that my one of my biggest problems is dropping my bow arm. I mean, for sure, I know I do that.
Yeah, that's one of the, I would say, release and dropping your bow arm with an ASL ones that'll get you the quickest.
Yeah, I didn't realize how much that affected the shot until I started shooting these again, because I think you have more forgiveness with like the most forgiving bow I have here is my Bear Grizzly. Right, I have a 1966 Bear Grizzly, and it's like I call it my fuzzy bunny slipper bow. Everything just naturally like shoots where I want. It's very, very forgiving of like you know, bad plucks and bad releases and things like that. And I didn't realize I was doing those nasty things until I started shooting this bow. And when I kind of catch myself doing it, remind myself, okay, have that bow arm rock solid. And sure enough, things fly straight. I didn't realize how just that little bit of dropping the bow arm, I would have thought the arrow would have been long gone by then. Right. But I guess it's not. I think what's happening is I'm dropping the bow arm, you know, low and left kind of thing, or to the left, while that thing is still through its power stroke. I mean, that's got to be it, because it shows up. It shows up downrange, or it's like, huh, why did I hit there?
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah, the dropping the bow arm is definitely a big one, and that's the probably last conscious thought I have in before I let go of the string is to push to the target with my bow arm.
Are you locked with your bow arm, or do you have a little bit of
a bent? I have a bent.
A little bit of a bent. So you can get that last little, you know,
yep,
inch of push or whatever it is up there. Gotcha. Yeah. I'm trying so many different things, Paul. You know what I mean? Just to see what works.
Yeah. That could be part of the problem too. You're trying too hard and overthinking it some.
Yeah.
But with this style, again, in my opinion, the harder you try, the more they're going to fight you. You know, if you look at what I call the old timers, the Wilhelm brothers and Howard Hill and a lot of them, all of them that shot this style of bow or a self bow way back.
Yeah.
They didn't hold. They drew back, and it was almost snapping, but not quite. So they just such a natural shot, and I think that's what these bows really like.
Do you think, at the risk of angering some people, maybe, but do you think that these bows are more conducive to be shot for those that are like really and truly more like fully instinctive or closer to the fully instinctive range versus like an aiming range?
Well, I mean, you know, Howard Hill had an aiming
split vision.
Split vision. Yep. You know, I kind of loosely do like a gap, you know, system. If it's a fast shot at a deer that's close, I just instinctively shoot at it. I don't really even pick a spot. I mean, you know, I don't think, all right, I need to aim this low below it. The shot just happens. And so to answer your question, I mean, there's all kind of guys that shoot them. Josh Miller, I know he has a very dedicated aiming system.
Yeah.
And he does hold for quite a while, and he's excellent with these bows. Michael Davenport, another friend of mine who's a great tournament archer and great hunter, he holds his for quite a while. But to me, it's just the longer I hold it, the more I mess up. So my shot from start to finish is just a few seconds.
Wow. Yeah, your words, again, I'm just going to keep referencing the push video, but you say pretty much what you just said here. Like, the more you think about what these things, the more you overaim, the worse it's going to be for you. That's your opinion, right? Yeah. But it seems to work for you. So every time I'm out in the field with this, I play that little snippet of that video in my head. I'm like, all right, don't overthink. But, for me, I have to kind of temper that a little bit with, I do need to see kind of the overall sight picture, right? I do kind of like a gap stinctive kind of thing. I don't actively aim as far as gap goes, but I do need to see like a 6 o'clock hold, and I do need to see that the aeroshaft is straight, especially since I have time. I think the problem's exacerbated by me, like, I'm starting to get like target panic, like, because I'm trying to like trying to concentrate on the pull and get to the feather to nose, but only because I want to be, again, at full draw and full alignment and not short stroke to thing. So I think that gives my brain too much time to see what's going on, and I long story short, I wish I could go through my shot sequence a little bit faster than I do with this thing, because I do find that when I think less about the minutiae of the shot, it does seem a little more natural. The only thing that holds me up is the time it takes for me to actually kind of come to, anchor, let's say, corner of the mouth, and then do that last little bit of expansion or pulling to touch the feather to nose. In that time, all kinds of bad things creep into my head with the sight picture, and it's just not as clear a mind as I wish I had during the shot.
Yeah. And the speed with that, and I'm not expecting anybody fast. I would suggest more to have a fluid shot. But the speed, the longer you do it and the longer you stick with this style of bow, the faster your shot, the whole sequence will be.
Yeah. Yeah, and the thing too with this, like, anyone who's picked this up, I know it's kind of everyone saying, well, it's like the newest fad now, right? Everyone's wanting an ASL, everyone's jumping. I'm putting my hand up. Yes, this is a style of bow that I've wanted to shoot well, because in my mind it's like, well, all these other people can shoot it, why can't I, right? I don't like something kicking my ass, right? So I want to shoot it well. And it's the one I just keep coming back to. Like, I mean, I'm staring at my bows on the wall right now. I've got like 1, 2, 3, four different bows. They all shoot beautiful. They all shoot whatever. But the one I keep reaching for, in the last, year, because I've had this bow for about a year. I think I got it about this time, a little bit earlier than this time last year, is this bow. Just because I want to get so good and so natural with it, and it just, but it's also the one that keeps me, the most honest, and second in line would be my elk card, actually. That's, and it has its own little quirks of how I need to shoot that bow, which are a little bit different than the way I need to shoot this bow. They both bite you in different ways, but I don't like losing, Paul. I don't like getting my butt kicked,
Well, and that's why you got to kind of do what the bow wants. You have to learn what the bow wants, because you can change how you shoot. That bow is going to shoot the same way and want the same things all the time. So once you figure out what each individual bow wants, more critical with an ASL, you'll be on the track.
That's a pretty profound statement. I agree with you. It goes to that on a greater kind of woo-woo level, where you can fight things all you want, but you're not going to change the way, like nature, whatever it is, happens to be, right? You're just going to have to you're going to have to be the one to kind of bend and go, go a little more fluid with it, rather than making it do what you want. Cause certain things, inanimate objects are like, nope, this is what I'm going to do. Yeah. And it's frustrating and you can't argue with it like a child, it definitely, it reminds you that, it's more stubborn than you are, right? Is that kind of fair?
They're definitely stubborn.
Okay. Let's talk. I want to talk a little bit about your hunting and hunting strategy, how you employ this bow. And also, let's just kind of go through your setup really quick, right? You said you're about 50 pounds. You're shooting about 11 grains per pound or whatever, woodies. What are you putting on the end? You know, what kind of broadhead? What have you tried? What works? Does it matter?
Yeah, so if I'm using wood arrows, I shoot ace broadheads. And if I'm using aluminum, I like the three-blade Montex. And I use some of the Woodsman's on wood arrows from time to time. If I have them and have some sharpened, I do like a three-blade broadhead. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of partial to them. I've always had real good luck with them. And two-blade, I just like the aces. They're made in my state, and they always go to all the traditional shoots, you know, to set up. So I try and buy from them, and I've done pretty good on deer with them over the years.
Yeah, I've got aces on mine actually. I've got them on that on those woodies. I was actually shooting that today, actually doing some stump shooting with the with that Browning, but I also have aces on the ASL. I mean, they fly great. Go ahead.
They fly like darts for sure.
Yeah, easy to sharpen. I file sharpen and then strop and all that stuff. I mean, to the point where, I mean, you know, I take pride in sharpening because I love sharpening so much. But I mean, I can genuinely shave with these things. But you know, I do the same things with, you know, Zwickies and stuff. But I mean, I'm like, well, if I could shoot a bigger broadhead, because these are inching, what, 3/16, I believe they are, instead of inching an eighth for the Zwickies. I'm like, I'm going to, if I can get them to fly, and they fly beautiful. You know, they fly just, I tried three blades. I just, the sight picture when I saw, you know, at the first time I drew back, and I'm like, oh, I don't like it. It just messed with my mind. So I'm like, okay, I'm just going to stick to two blades. I'm going to try and shoot a big one. You know, I kind of settled on these. So these are, these are what I'm going to go with. So, do you see much difference? You've shot a ton of stuff, right? I mean, a truckload of stuff. So do you see a ton of difference between, A, blood trails, and B, you know, how quickly they'll die, right? Between two blade, three blade.
Well, and again, this, I know we're getting into dangerous territory with different guys, but this is just what I've seen in the deer that I've shot over the years. Two blade, you know, a perfect double lung shot with a two blade off the ground, you won't have any blood hardly. Sometimes you do, but you're not just going to have a lot because, you know, and again, off the ground is different than from a tree. Because, you know, the entry and exit wounds are parallel and, you know, there's just not going to be a lot of blood anyway. And with a two blade, you're going to have less. And as far as the distance to where they drop, maybe a little bit farther than a three blade, not a lot. Really, I've kind of kept track over the last couple of years and I've had the most blood and the shortest blood trails with the G5 Montex. I don't know why. There's really nothing special about them. But every deer I've shot with those, I think in the past 2 years, I've maybe killed 9 deer with those, with the three blade Montex, and every blood trail's been under 30 yards and a lot of blood.
Wow. And that's not a broadhead that a lot of people would consider, you know, traditional, right? I mean, people would say, oh, you can't shoot that. It's too steep of an angle. You know.
So the reason I got them is I can get them in 125s, which I like. They're super easy to sharpen. They're very consistent in weight. They spin great. And also you can get them just about everywhere. You know, any big box store, sporting goods store has got them. You might have trouble finding the 125s, but, you know, in the grand scheme of things, they're a pretty cheap broadhead and you can get them just on a flat stone. You can get them where they'll shave, no problem.
Well, what do you do to adapt them then to a woody, or do you not shoot those out of a wood?
No, I don't shoot the wood. I just shoot those out of aluminum.
Okay. Gotcha. Okay. So you are a big ground hunter, right? Do you use, I think you said you almost exclusively hunt from the ground. Is that true?
Yes. Okay. In fact, I just bought my first tree stand this week.
Oh, no kidding.
So for late season, you know, into December and into January where there's not much cover, I'll probably tree stand hunt a little bit. But other than that, I strictly ground hunt.
Why is that? What are the areas? Like, how do you hunt? I mean, I don't know if you're on private, public, whatever, but what makes ground hunting more conducive to the area that you're in versus, you know, being able to put up a tree stand or something?
Well, so, you know, years ago, and I've explained this, I think even on the video you were talking about, when I first started hunting, I just hunted public, and all the, you know, the oak flats and all that stuff, there were always people in them. So I just started hunting in all the thickets where nobody wanted to go, and there were no trees. So I just started hunting on the ground. And, you know, before I knew it, I'd been doing it for 5 or 6 years and hadn't been in a tree at all. And, you know, had plenty of deer and never saw another person. It really just kind of developed my system, I guess you could call it that.
Yeah.
And I've been doing it ever since.
So your equipment, okay. What are you walking in with, and how are you setting up?
So as far as equipment, I use the little HS Struts turkey seat. I did buy a little while back. I haven't used it in hunting yet, but I bought a Waldrop pack seat. A guy in Georgia makes them. I stumbled across one on YouTube or something, thought they looked pretty neat, but I got the turkey seat version, which is still really low to the ground.
Are those still being made?
Yeah, I just bought one.
Okay.
It's been a month ago or so.
Cause those seats get talked about a lot in, you know, in these kind of circles. And then it's one of those things. It's like, oh, so-and-so used to make it. And then, you know, if you can find one, pick one up. And then it wasn't being made. So, okay. So they're back in business.
I went to their website and ordered one.
Okay.
In less than a week.
Oh.
You know, and they're not, I'm not going to say they're, you know, the HS Strut seat that I use is about $15. And this one's quite a bit more than that. So I watched every YouTube video I could find, which there aren't many, and talked to everybody I could that maybe it had one. And finally, I just, you know, they're guaranteed for life. The guy seems like a really good guy that makes them. So he's pretty passionate about them. And I just went ahead and ordered one. And I've not, like I said, not hunted with it, but I have shot my bow out of it and just to see how it feels. And I think it's going to be a pretty good one. It's got a backrest, which, you know, for the guys that are out there that are over 50 and you're sitting, you know, for 4 or 5 hours, a backrest does help.
I know. I think Steve Angel uses one of those too. I mean, he does tree stand too, but I think he's got a couple videos or a video or something like that on there too. I've seen them. I've never seen one in person or used it. So the seats to me, like anytime I've tried to sit, anything that has kind of like a back or anything you kind of lean back towards, it almost feels kind of weird to draw the bow because, you know, when we stand up and shoot, you know, I don't know if you tend to hunch over, I tend to hunch over a little bit. So it's almost like you're in the opposite direction. You're like, you know, lean back instead of, you know, forward or whatever. So, anytime I sit in any kind of like tripod stool, you know, I'm going to have some of these like cheapy tripod stools, you know, that just kind of fold up and, you know, strap to the side of your backpack or whatever. If I lean back against the tree, I'm like, man, you know, if something just pops up, I'm going to make a lot of movement, like leaning forward and then starting to shoot, you know? So, I'm just curious how that motion works for you, on the ground.
So I've not really hunted with a seat that's got a back on it. Mm-hmm. But normally if I can get away with it, if I see the deer coming or if it's already past me, which is even better, I get up on my knees and that's how I shoot most of my deer is like squatted down on my knees. So I've shot them, you know, sitting in on that turkey seat, but most of the ones I shoot, I'm kind of hunched over on my knees.
So do you rock forward then from a sitting position, just kind of rock forward onto your knees? Yep. Is that okay? Yep. How high is that seat, that HS Strut one that you use? You told me that it was pretty low.
Yeah, I'd say it's maybe 4 inches, 5 inches off the ground.
So when you're sitting there, what do you do with your legs? Are they out in front of you, or just, I mean?
I just cross them.
Okay.
Sit with my legs crossed most of the time.
Okay. I'm trying to think of the movement that, like, the motion, like, it would need, that I would need to sit there and uncross, kind of rock forward. You know, I don't know that I'd be able to do that in a smooth fashion.
Well, if you practice it and do it long enough, you can. I'm a big guy, so.
Yeah.
If I can do it, anybody can do it.
Yeah. So you're tucked in, lots of back cover, sitting there, and I mean, you're basically just waiting for the quartering away shot, right? I mean, and we're talking, what, you're setting up less than 15 yards away from, I don't know, known trails, or?
If I can get 15 to 20 off of a trail, that's what I like. Because it never fails, they're not going to be actually on the specific trail that I'm looking at, and then they're either too far away or too close. But I always try and get kind of off at an angle to where they'll pass me and I can get a quartering away shot.
Yeah.
So I don't try and move at all with the deer coming to me, because they'll almost always pick you out.
Are you a believer in camo or any kind of like ghillie or leafy or anything like that?
Well, you know, I've killed them and I've hunted and been successful in blue jeans and a flannel shirt off the ground. And I've been successful wearing a ghillie suit. Later in season, I'll definitely camo more, you know, as the foliage dies and goes away. I had never used a ghillie suit. I'm not going to say I made fun of them, but I kind of made fun of them for years. And then I finally got one, and it is amazing. The deer can be, I had one last year that I thought was going to start biting the ghillie suit. It was that close.
Really?
It's just like something happens in their head and they don't recognize you as a human, you know, human form. And, they just don't pay any attention to you.
Are we talking ghillie or leafy?
Yeah, ghillie suit.
Ghillie suit.
The problem I have with the leafy suit, and I know a lot of guys use them and are very successful with them, but if you know, when you're going to get up on your knees or to raise your bow for the shot, the leaves are so short that they kind of quiver.
Mm-hmm.
And from a distance, it just looks like your whole upper body shaking and kind of quivering with the short leaves. And a ghillie suit doesn't do that because it's long enough that.
I've heard guys criticize some of those limb covers, not the ones that are just kind of like the camo socks, but like the ones that actually have some sort of leafy cover or whatever. Yeah. On them, you know what I mean? Yeah. And they're like, well, same thing. Why would you want to make movement with your bow as you're drawing or whatever? And because it looks like those, you know, the branch basically is bending backwards or stuff's moving, right? So it's interesting that you say that.
Yeah, and I don't do the only thing. Last year I hunted with a quiver. It was the first year I've ever used a quiver. Before I always used a bow, you know, with nothing on it in a back quiver. But the Creek Walker quivers are super quiet, mm-hmm. and I really like those. But as far as, you know, the limb covers or anything like that, the bow is so quiet. I just hate to do anything to mess that up.
Do you stick anything into the, because I've tried that before too, just to see, right? Like I'll grab a branch or something like that, just some deadfall, really light stuff, right? And kind of stick it into, you know where the quiver mounts to the bow, you know, just to kind of have a little bit of kind of brush in front of your face, you know, when you lift it up. I'm thinking you might run into the same problem, right? If you have too much movement, it looks like stuff's shaking and moving.
Yeah.
Have you ever tried that? I've
never tried it. No.
Okay. Just curious. I don't know. I can see it both ways. You know, I can see it. If you do it slow enough, you are kind of hiding behind something, but if you do have that motion, then it's going to probably, you know, set off like, you know, they, you know, set off an alarm bell going, huh, what's moving over there? So I don't know. I'm just kind of curious. The gilly, let's go back to the gilly here. So I've got a leafy and a gilly. The leafy is a little bit lighter color. The gilly I have is kind of darker green, right? Not my favorite. It's great in, you know, for blending in, let's say early season, mid season, whatever, but late season, kind of like you were saying, not a lot of cover. That's the reason you're going vertical, right? You're going to try, you know, getting up a little higher.
Yeah.
Do you think that the gilly would stand out more, as like this big lump of dark, basically, where there is no other dark behind you? Like, 'cause early season, you can blend in behind, you know, in front, if you're in front of a bush or in front of a deadfall. Winter, you know, late season, and I'm even more north than you, right? So it's kind of like bleak sometimes, and in some of the areas I go, like, there's swamps, not a lot of cover, not a lot of, you know, very kind of barren, not very healthy trees, because I mean, they're trying to go, the trees there, what, even on a good year, they're trying to grow in like a bog, right? So they're not exactly full and lush and robust trees in the first place. So I don't know. What would be your opinion? I mean, do you think that matters? I mean, because to my mind, I'm like, well, there's nothing there but kind of ragged sticks here and there, and then there's this kind of dark blob.
Well, I have two. I have one for, you know, that's primarily green for early season, and I have one that's brown and gray for late season. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's just all where you choose to hunt. The later the season, the thicker cover I hunt. So I'll hunt briar thickets and, you know, stuff that you would never think you could hunt in late December and January.
Yeah.
So still is cover. Because even if the leaves are gone, there's still the vines and the, you know, the thorn bushes and all that stuff. And I get.
You kind of get tucked into there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Gotcha. Are you hunting public or private?
I've got one little spot that's about 7 acres of public that I get to hunt. But the majority of what we hunt is public.
So going in, right? Are you going in with, are you a backpack guy? Are you a minimalist? Are you going back in when you shoot something? Are you boning it out? What's your kind of strategy like?
I have a small backpack that I just have, you know, binoculars, I always have pruners with me. If I can do it on some public land, you're not allowed to touch any foliage to cut it. But I always have that, you know, in my skinning and cleaning stuff in my backpack. But no, I don't ever, I've never boned them out. I just drag them out. It seems like I've seen a lot of guys do it, and it does look pretty appealing.
Mm-hmm.
But up to this point, I've never done that. I just drag them out, or if they're really, you know, a couple miles back in, I've got a deer cart that I'll take.
Okay, just go back in and get a deer cart. Yeah.
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 It's weird here, right? So there's a lot of CWD around here, CWD areas, monitor, you know, CWD monitoring zones and whatever. So regardless, which I still don't understand the reasoning for it. Here you can bone it out, but you still got to go, like, you can bone out a deer, you can piece out a deer, whatever, after you do the, you know, electronic or phone check-in, right? But you still have to go and get the carcass, which kind of blows my mind. Like,
kind of defeats,
you know, it. Yeah. I don't understand the purpose of that. I just don't get it. On private, you can do whatever you want. You can go, you know, bone it out, and that's what I'll do at my buddy's place when I hunt up there or whatever. Bone it out there, put it in the backpack, and off I go, right? On public, you have to shoot one, so we'll see. But you can, you know, skin it, quarter it out, you know, go back in. But then they want you to go back in and get all the carcass, basically, everything but the guts. And that just, I don't understand. If they, I mean, it's not like these animals don't die in the woods, right? So why not leave them where they lay and bone them out and just take the bone out instead of dragging a carcass, you know, hundreds of yards or a mile or 2 miles, whatever the hell it is. I don't know. It just doesn't make sense. But it is nice when you can do that, though, you know, when you can just kind of go in one trip, put it all in your, you know, put it all in your backpack and then and kind of hoof it out. So
yes, my hesitation with quartering them out and carrying them like that is messing up my area even more. Because normally when I shoot one, I don't even field dress it right there. I get it away from the area because I don't want to spoil the hunting spot. And whether that has any bearing on it or not, I don't know. That's just what I've always done. You know, and I field dress them pretty close to the area, just not right in that area where I've shot them. Early season here, October, pretty much all October, it's in the 80s and 90s, so it's hot. So yeah. I'm going to get them out, get them field dressed, and get ice on them as quick as I can.
Are you concerned about kind of attracting predators and pushing out anything else, or just the fact that there's like a gut pile, or you think just, it's going to...
And more of my human scent around. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty OCD about my scent.
Yeah.
You know, keeping it, you know, using a scent cover and staying as low key as I can as far as the deer are concerned.
Gotcha. What else do you hunt? Is it just, I mean, are you just a full on deer guy, or do you go on other chase other critters?
No, I pretty much just deer hunt. I always get a turkey tag in the fall, and you know, if I can get on some turkeys in the fall, I'll try and get one of those. I am going bear hunting this fall,
nice.
In Minnesota, so I'm looking really forward to that because I've never been out of Illinois hunting. So
no kidding.
Just grew up hunting whitetails in southern Illinois, and that's kind of what I stuck with.
Are you going? Just like public, or are you going with an outfitter up here or something like that? Or
no, I believe it is public. It's up in Minnesota.
Yeah, you don't have to tell me where. I'm just curious, yeah. If you're going with something. Yeah.
So it should be pretty interesting.
Well, on your travels through here, you should stop by and say hi. Yeah. Be good to meet you. Yeah, lots of bear hunting is it's on my radar now. It's definitely because just recently, I mean, I'm just watching guys all from all over, right? You know, Schaefer from, you know, Broken Arrow, right? I mean, he just shot one up in Canada. Everybody's going up to Canada, Manitoba, Ontario, New Brunswick, whatever. And just these bears are just like, I've never even seen a bear in the wild. We have bears around here, right? Not many, but I mean, you know, we have some that, you know, have been, you know, photographed or on a video, you know, just crossing main intersections, like not very far from me, you know, and I'm not exactly in the, you know, I'm in the suburbs, but I'm not exactly like in the boonies or anything. So they're here and they're definitely up north. And it's just got my pulse going. Now, I don't have the time or the dedication to, you know, drive up 2-3 hours every weekend, you know, bait for months and, you know, that kind of stuff. Right. But I would love to go next year, you know, like on a spring bear hunt or something like that up to, I mean, within 9-12 hours of me. Right. I mean, I can go to, you know, places in Ontario that come highly recommended and Manitoba that come highly recommended. So it's on my radar, you know.
Yeah, I'm really curious to see how it's going to go. And, you know, it'll, even if I just get to see some and have good hunt, you know, in a new spot, I'll be happy. So I'm going to do that this fall. And I really want to go hog hunting. I've never got to do that. So
really
bear this fall or summer. And then I'm really going to try and focus on getting a hog.
So funny you say that. I got a text from, do you know Jim Desaias?
No.
Anyway, so he used to run kind of a, not an outfitting, but I mean, he would kind of guide here on in Florida, and he's been a fishing guide, you know, forever though. So he just recently moved to North Carolina, but he texted me today and he's like, hey, do you want to go on a hog hunt? And by the way, it's just in a couple weeks in Georgia. What's that?
That's how it usually happens. You get a week.
Yeah. Out. Yep. So quick check with the wife and it's like, yeah, sure. So the deposit went. So 21st, 22nd, something like that down there in Georgia. I'm heading down there. So I've in my previous life, in my previous job, we used to go to Florida a lot. At the end of our, I was in the racing industry, right? So we would end our season in Daytona, and near Daytona they have a lot of like, you know, pay to play, like pick your port kind of places, right? And I would go every year for many years, and you know, over a feeder, that kind of thing. I've shot plenty with a rifle, shot with my compound, lost two with my Kodiak Magnum, but yeah. But I haven't gone in a couple of years. I don't do that job anymore. I'm, you know, got a, you know, normal job now. So I don't go to Florida, but I haven't been able to hog hunt. So I'm really excited to go down and do this. So it's one of the PBS ones. And yeah, it just literally just happened like hours ago. And he's like, hey, do you want to go this last minute? Like, yeah, sure. Why not?
Yeah, should be fun.
Sorry, you broke up there. What?
I said it should be fun. It'll be hot for sure.
It's going to be hot. I don't do well in heat and humidity, but I'm not going to pass up, you know, not going on a hunt because it's hot and humid. No, so the only question is now is, you know, what kind of creepy crawlies are down there? And of course, you know, I've been watching all of Jason Sam Koviak's videos. Lately, Robert Carter's videos lately about snakes and snake boots. And I'm like, God, do I need snake boots now? You know, I don't want to just buy snake boots just for one hunt. And then, so I'm on Amazon now looking at like, okay, snake boots. They make snake gaiters. They make like temporary, like snake kind of, almost like wader, like kind of things. You know what I mean? It's like, man, it's kind of cheap insurance. You know, if I have to go down there or treasure around or if I have to chase something, you know, because I don't know. I was in mid shopping, you know, and yeah, I'm not sure which way that's going to go. I'm probably going to end up buying something, you know, just for peace of mind.
Yeah. The snake thing would be interesting.
Yeah. I'm not a fan of spiders, not a fan of heat, but I'm going to go and it's going to be good. So then, of course, it's like it brings it back to, OK, well, what am I going to take? You know, I'm going to drive down there so I can bring everything I have, you know, but do I want to do that or do I want to just kind of just pick one and dedicate to one, you know? And it's I don't know. I haven't even processed all that yet with all the, and I'm an overthinker. I don't know if you gathered that about me, but I'm an overthinker. So I'll sit there and look at this like, OK, well, what if it's this and what if it's that and how many arrows do I have for this? And you know, how close are the shots going to be, and you know, which would be a better fit for this hunt. And you know, reality is that I should just probably just go eeny meeny miny mo, close my eyes and just pick one and go.
Well, of course I'm partial to the ASL.
Yeah.
But I will say the more time you dedicate to it, the better off you'll be.
Yeah.
If you bounce around back and forth, it causes trouble.
That's for sure. That's for sure. Yeah. And I think it's part of the reason, like I said, I've been kind of exclusively picking it up. You know, I've got these sitting on the bow rack here, but when I go out, I'm like, this is what I'm going to reach for because this is the one that, you know, I'm going to make this relationship work, damn it, whether it wants to or not.
Well, just listen to what the bow wants.
That's true. That's true. God, we've been going for over an hour and something here. So I don't want to take too much of your time tonight, but I mean, we've talked about a lot. I'm really glad we did this, but is there anything else that you want to touch on that, anything like glaring that I'm missing or that someone new to this, would be missing some nuggets of wisdom?
Not that I can think of, just, you know, the ground hunting, it's really hard to, you know, to explain. You know, without having somebody in the woods, just hunt in the thicker spots and get way back in where nobody else is going to be. Scent control is super important. The most important thing, in my opinion, for ground hunting. And
are you doing anything special for that? Or are you just kind of playing the wind and milkweed kind of thing?
I play the wind for sure. And I won't hunt a spot unless the wind's perfect. Mm-hmm. And as far as scent control, the only thing I use is it's like an earth scented scent control that I make. I make my own. So it's worked good for me for years. And that's what I stick with. I don't use any of the, you know, Doe and Heat stuff or anything like that. I just don't want to draw more attention to me.
Yeah. Is it like a, what do you do? Is it like a spray bottle? Or what do you,
yeah.
What?
Yeah. It's quite a process to make it. Mm-hmm. But I try and make enough for the season. And I just carry a big spray bottle. It's stuck in the side of my backpack. And, you know, I'm constantly spraying my hunting clothes and I'll spray myself again, you know, if I'm, especially early in the season, you know, in October when it's so hot and I'm sitting for a while, I'll, you know, every hour I'll spray myself again, spray the area. Yeah.
Is it something that's super secret or can you talk about it?
That's kind of secret.
Okay.
In fact, I thought about making enough to start letting other people try it, but
yeah,
I don't know if I'll have time to do that or not. I'm not going to say it's a super big secret, but it's pretty in depth, the process of making it. That's why.
Really?
Yeah, I make 2 or 3 gallons of it at the beginning of every season.
And that, interesting. So last year I started carrying that Evercom, you know, it kind of comes like a deodorant stick, you know, it's supposed to smell like deer dander.
Yeah.
And I was using that like on my, let's say like final approach, if I'm kind of walking in, you know, on a main trail or whatever, but then like the last, I don't know, 50 yard, 100 yard push or whatever to wherever I'm going to end up, I'll put some on my boots. I'll randomly put some on my calves, you know, because I know I'm going to brush up against stuff as I'm walking by. And then nearby, I'll just kind of put like a little smear, you know, on you know, tree trunks and that kind of stuff. But, I don't do the scents, you know, the Doe and Heat, that kind of stuff, or, you know, in any of that other, you know, vanilla or whatever. People seem to swear by the Evercom kind of thing, just because it's not necessarily like a cover scent. It's just supposed to make other deer feel a little more at ease, thinking, I can smell other stuff, but there's fresh deer here and maybe it's okay for them. So it's okay for me. I think that's the idea that goes on through their little deer brains. I don't know. I'm not a deer, but.
Well, I try and use stuff that other people aren't, because there's, especially on our public, there's so many guys hunting. And I figure by, you know, the end of October, they've smelled enough doe urine and fox pee and everything else that if they smell it, they're going to head to the next county.
I kind of think of it like, not that a lot of people go to the malls anymore, but you know, when you walk through, I'm sure you've been through one, you're walking through the mall and you go into like one of the department stores, right? And the first thing they have, they used to have there, I don't know if they still do, I haven't been in there one in a long time, Macy's, whatever, any of these places, the first thing that you walk into is usually like the cosmetic thing, right? And it just smells like a perfume bomb went off, right? As soon as it's like you cross into that, and it's just overpowering. So I think that's what the deer think too, because I mean, you got, you know, Joe Bob and Billy Bob and Billy Ray and everybody, you know, there are 15 other people that do like the scent bombs and you know, sprays and you know, the wicks and the drips and all that stuff. And I'm like, they can't possibly be fooled by this because it's just overwhelming, you know? So even if like, I don't know, one of those scents would work, just that much of it is just so unnatural in the woods that the deer is like, I'm out of here.
Yeah. Yeah. I want them to be as common as they can be.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
But other than, you know, scent control and wind direction and, you know, getting away from the crowd and getting the thick stuff. That's about all the words of wisdom that I have as far as that kind of stuff.
Got it. Okay. Well, first of all, thank you for all this. I mean, thank you for all the knowledge. This has been great because I mean, I can pick your brain for, a long, long time, especially, you know, like talking to people who actually have a lot of success with these things, because I don't, and I'm trying to take notes from everybody that, that is successful. So I do appreciate you being on. If people want to follow you, where do they follow you? What do you got coming up? That kind of thing.
Oh, I'm as far as following me, I'm on Facebook, and that's about it. I'm on Instagram for my business, but just me personally, Facebook. That's about it. Coming up, my wife and I are headed to Traditional Nationals in Cloverdale, Indiana tomorrow. We'll be there all weekend shooting.
Okay. Are you going to go to ETAR at all?
Yes.
You are? Okay, cool. I am too. That's on the books. I'm actually going to go. So we'll I might get to meet you.
Yeah, I've never been, and we're going to go to, we're taking our vacation, and we're going to go to Trad Worlds, and then we're going to work our way up to ETAR, and we got a, you know, Airbnb with some guys, and going to hopefully do a lot of shooting and meet some people that I've talked to and never got to meet, so.
Yeah, me too. I've never been. It's going to be my first year, so same thing. I mean, all these people that, you know, we have this online community of, you know, like air quotes, you know, friends, you know, yeah. But it's, we've never actually met. I've never actually met. So I'm really looking forward to that. I'm really looking forward to that whole event. So I'll definitely hook up over there and meet in person. So,
yeah.
All right. Well, I appreciate it. Hang out with me here real quick while we close up. I really do appreciate you being on. It's kind of, well, not too late, but it's kind of late. So it worked out that we're both Central time here. So, everybody go follow Paul. Not that you're not on Instagram and stuff like that, but I do see you on Facebook and stuff. And so if you like this episode, please like, share, subscribe. If you guys have any comments or any other questions or anything like that, I'd love to hear them. Send them my way. Is it okay if they contact you, Paul, if they send you a messenger or whatever? Or...
Yeah, that's no problem.
Okay. All right. Definitely do that. And I guess next time I do this recording, I'm hopefully will be down in Georgia and not snake bitten. So we'll see. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening, and I'll talk to you guys next time.